Hey, Bulldog basketball fans, and welcome back to the Drake Basketball Podcast. Does anybody know, has anything exciting happened recently in the basketball world? Eduardo, you know of anything?
I think we won again yesterday, 73-70, I think it was. I mean, like, Bennett, I think, hit the game-winning shot, but, like, he's pretty clutch, so he seems to always make plays like that anyway.
Oh, just kidding. We're trying to play it cool, just like Drake basketball, now legend, Bennett Sturts. Judging by his reaction after he hit that shot in Kansas City, you never would have known what an incredible shot it was. That man must have ice in his veins.
No, it was a super cool moment. We were definitely trying to do our best play it cool Bennett Sturts impression. 73-70 beating Kansas State in Kansas City. Another great win for the Bulldogs, keeping our record perfect at 10-0, and another quality win under our belt. But just to kick it off, Tucker, what was your reaction live and just general takeaways from the game?
Yeah, so this was a great one. Obviously, Drake off to a 10-0 start now. In case you missed this one, this was in the Sprint Center in Kansas City in front of about 10,000 fans, most of whom were wearing K-State purple. But Drake did have a good showing. There was a big stripe of blue there behind the Bulldog bench. Drake led this one early thanks to a blistering hot start from Mitch Mascari. The Bulldogs were up 29-9 with 5:50 left in the first. But Kansas State did not go away. Jerome Tang changed defenses, ramped up the pressure, and by halftime, that lead was down to 9. And, you know, ultimately, 40 minutes was not enough to decide this one. Went to overtime, where Coleman Hawkins hit a deep three to tie the game at 70 points apiece, at which point I was swearing, but Bennett Sturts was completely unfazed, brought the ball down court, hit a nifty little crossover move into a pull-up three, and I just went ballistic in my living room. What a great time to be a Bulldog fan. If you would have told me when we hired Ben McCollum that we were going to be undefeated this far into the season, on the verge of being ranked in the top 25 with wins over the Big 12, the SEC, the ACC, I'm still ecstatic about it.
Yeah, another great win by Drake. I mean, we talked about it going into it, that this was going to be the cherry on top if they were able to close it out and beat another Power 5 opponent. And it was really impressive. I mean, again, they got off to a hot start. I give Drake a lot of credit for not hanging its head. I honestly, you know, aside from that bad stretch of turnovers that we had, like Kansas State was just ice cold to start out shooting the deep ball. And then when they went on their run, they hit like 4 threes in a 2 minute stretch. So I didn't really even think like we did anything too differently. They just started hitting some shots, got back into the game. But for Drake to hang in there and still pull it out just says a lot about their resiliency. And I would say, you know, going back, I was watching the playback this morning, Kansas State is going to be sick to their stomach watching the open threes that they gave Mitch Mascari. Just ridiculous. Like we talked about in our last podcast, like there's been games where you can take Mitch out and you can face guard him and be really aggressive, but they were just letting him roam free. And credit Mascari, he was on fire. 8 threes on the night. I think he ended up with 25 points. And just carried us, especially in the first and second half, late in the second half. And I texted you when we went to overtime, like, okay, I'm ready for the Bennett Sturts takeover. And I really believe that just because he's always in control. And if we're talking about, hey, you get to play 5 more minutes against a quality opponent, if Bennett has the ball in his hands, you just know you're either going to get a quality look or he's going to score. So huge win for Drake, Bennett, and Mascari. Obviously, the huge performances from them. Anything else that really jumped out at you, either on the K-State side or the Drake side?
Well, first, I just want to agree with you in terms of how they were defending Mitch, because he had a couple of circus shots that he made from three, but by and large, especially early on, K-State just was not defending him well. And for a knockdown shooter like Mitch, it's like if you give him good looks from deep, he's going to hit them. And I was just perplexed as to how they came into the game, knowing that he was one of the best shooters in America, and yet deciding to defend him the way they defended him.
They went under the screen multiple times. Again, like this is just like attention to detail, bad scouting report from Kansas State. It's either you didn't pay any attention to Drake or your players were just being lazy. Like it's one or the other, right? Because multiple times, just the simple screen pick and pop and Mitch wide open. And even, and I know you had some thoughts on how they were defending Isaiah Jackson, but late in the game, they're still kind of sagging off Isaiah Jackson. He drives like one step into the paint, just scoops it back to Mitch, and he's completely wide open at the top of the
Oh my
key for
God.
three.
Yeah. And at that point in the game, after he has burned you already for that amount of threes, to leave him wide open like that for just a simple pitch back.
It's crazy. I mean, they were lazy. And credit Kansas State. They got back into it. I thought Coleman Hawkins did a good job putting the ball on the floor. He also was 3 of 8 from the line, which was crucial down the stretch. I don't know why he was struggling so much to knock down the freebies. But again, Drake just found a way. And I really loved that Drake was able to keep the game at our pace. Big thing for Drake there was to
Yep.
keep the possessions low, and they did that. They forced Kansas State to play our game. They kept controlling the tempo. And I also want to call out again, like we were really struggling to score the ball in the second half, and Abreu and Bennett had two massive pick twos, if you will. To get just some points on the board to close out the game. But yeah, 10 and
Yeah,
0, 10 and
when
0.
points were at a premium, Bennett's defense was absolutely huge. And those two steals that you mentioned, you could just feel sort of the pressure that had been building. Like it was a pressure valve release for me as a fan, because I was just sitting there on the edge of my seat, just so tense. And then when he got that steal and took it the length of the court, it was just like, thank God.
Yeah, no, they were massive. Again, just we were struggling. They were sagging off Isaiah. I mean, this is a game where if you want to take a step back a little bit, our lack of depth was really starting to show a bit, especially not having Andrew Aliyah, not having another ball handler out there that can just release some pressure from Bennett. I think you could kind of see that, and you also had that coincide with Tavion not having a great game scoring wise, right? Shooting the ball. And Nate only plays 3 minutes, didn't look good and had turnover. So you ended up playing with basically six guys the entire game. And you had Abreu, Mitch, Bennett going the full 45. So true Ironman performances. And they figured out how to get the win somehow.
Yeah. And in his post-game interview, Coach McCollum referenced and credited the toughness of this team with this victory. And I know you and I have talked about it. When a team goes on a run against Drake, it's not if Drake will respond, it's when Drake will respond. And I think that was really evident on this in what was, I know it was credited as a neutral environment, but the Kansas State logo was on the floor. There was a Kansas State light show, and it was probably an 80-20 Kansas State crowd advantage when they were going on their giant run, came back from 20 points down. Drake responded, and they rallied, and Bennett Sturts stepped up in true player of the year form. And I just can't say enough about the tenacity of this team and how mentally tough they are.
I also want to call out, since we're on the positives right now, Drake once again out-rebounding a team that would seemingly have more length, more size. So again, the gang rebounding, the attention to detail once again on display for the Bulldogs. And on Bennett, I would say, I think the way I would describe it is he has such a great feel for when to take over and when to try to get others involved, because he didn't have a great scoring game, midway through the second. I think he had, 8, 9 points at that time of the game. But as the game got deeper, as the game got into overtime, it's like, okay, now I need to be more aggressive. Now I need to assert myself a little bit more. It reminds me a little bit of Roman Penn in that way of just kind of always having a handle on the game. But as we've talked about before, Bennett is just such a natural shooter, and such a good scorer when he really wants to be. And down the stretch, that was the difference of just having a guard that can have full control of the game. And even when Kansas State hits a big three to tie it, he just comes down, calmly knocks down a three, and Drake takes the win. I know that you had also talked to me about the Isaiah Jackson issues. Watching that live, what was your reaction to how K-State was defending Isaiah and then the effect that had on the Bulldog offense?
Yeah, and when you see Isaiah Jackson issues, that makes it sound like it's an issue with Isaiah Jackson, which isn't the case at all. It's an issue with our spacing overall, which is what you and I had talked about. In that, I mean, on the night the Bulldogs had 9 threes, 8 of which came from Mitch, 1 of which came from Bennett on the game winner. So really, our spacing right now is very limited. We don't have a lot of range or versatility in terms of ways to space the floor. So like when Isaiah is playing point, what they were doing on ball screens is they would switch a big man on him and essentially just sag that big man all the way into the lane and allow him to get really clean looks at the hoop because they knew that he wasn't going to shoot it. But that clogged up all those cutting and driving lanes that Ben McCollum's offense is so dependent upon, and it really interferes with a lot of the reads that we need our players to make. So I just think that in order for the Bulldogs to really optimize their offensive capabilities, that's something that they need to work on moving forward, is figuring out how to make him more of an offensive threat. Because, it's like Isaiah, I guarantee you he has the ability to make a mid-range jumper. Like, he's a
Right.
Division I basketball player. He's a talented guy. And if he's not shooting it, maybe he's been told not to. And if Ben McCollum is telling him not to, then far be it for me to just disagree with him, because he knows he's forgotten more about basketball than I'll ever know. So if so, ignore what I'm saying here. But just when they're sagging off him that far at point, it really disrupts a lot of the spacing on the floor. So I just think we need to find a solution there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely felt like Kansas State was just, hey, let's pick our poison. Let's play 5-on-4. And if we can just shift all of our attention to Bennett and Mitch, then we'll just live with whatever Isaiah Jackson scores, right? And I mean, in his defense, I would say he's probably a little bit confused, right? I mean, nobody's used to being defended that way, and he probably was just like, okay, should I drive it, should I pull up from the mid-range, should I like I he'll be better prepared if someone tries to defend Drake that way again. And he's shown, I mean, in his career, like, yeah, he's not a 50% 3-point shooter, but he's a capable enough shooter that he can score. So he'll be better prepared. And I mean, to your point, yeah, spacing is huge in our offense, which is why we've talked about needing enough 3-point shooting to be able to space it out. I also thought we had some issues kind of operating from the elbow, with when Nate came into the game, but Cam had some issues too. Just have to be strong with the ball, and we rely so much on the action that's happening kind of in that mid post, top of the key area. So a couple things that I think stood out, when Kansas State was going on their run for sure.
And how about just the sheer balls of Bennett knocking down that shot against his childhood school? Both his parents, I believe, went to Kansas State. His girlfriend is a dancer at Kansas State currently. And he goes in there in front of friends and family against the hometown team and hits the dagger to send them packing.
No, it's incredible. I mean, this is why college basketball is pretty cool. You have a kid that it plays high school basketball at a really high level, doesn't get any offers, doesn't get Kansas State to notice him, to take a look. Ben McCollum takes him to Northwest Missouri State, comes to Drake, brings him over, and now you're playing Kansas State and you hit that shot to win the game. It's pretty cool. And we always talk about kind of that revenge factor when you're in a mid-major and you probably have that chip on your shoulder, and just really cool. I'm happy for Bennett. I would say that the overall reaction from Bulldog fans after that shot was, I can't believe that guy's on our team. Like, just the coolness of the moment, the calmness, and just the sheer basketball skill. Yeah, this is it's crazy that it's taken 6, 7 weeks to have a brand new ad identity, a brand new leader, and so much success already for Ben McCollum. But this is where we are. And Drake's off to a, you could argue this has been their best non-conference start really ever. You know, since the last, like, I can't remember if we beat any good teams in 2008. I'm assuming we probably had some good non-conference wins, but I would put this non-conference up against any of the non-conferences that Coach DeBris had. And I would say it's probably even better when you look at the quality of wins we've had.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who we played in 2021 when we had our 18-0 start.
Well, I believe Kansas State wasn't that was in there, or was that the following year?
It's an excellent question.
We have a stellar investigation team here at the Drake Basketball Podcast, and we have multiple interns that do stats and information for us,
Yeah, let's get the
full-fledged
research.
stats.
Let's get the research department on that.
But at any rate, you know, it's been a terrific start to the non-con, and we're definitely in great position, and I think we have everyone's attention in the valley. You know, we talked about going into the season like, well, it's kind of nice being under the radar and not having the bullseye on our back like we have the past few years. But I think we have the attention solely back on Drake as being the leading contender in the valley, and for Bennett to be the leading player of the year contender as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think anyone who is still resisting the fact that Drake is the front runner in the Valley and that Bennett Sturts is the front runner for player of the year is either delusional or a Bradley fan. Sorry, I'm being redundant there.
And for the record, I did check with our two interns, and we did beat Kansas State to kick off the season in the 2020-2021 season, which would probably have been our best non-con start. When you go through it, South Dakota, Air Force were in there. That was kind of it as far as good non-conference opponents. Remember, this was during the COVID era, so it was harder to get those types of games aligned.
Yeah, and it's funny because that one was actually at Kansas State in Manhattan, technically, but because it was COVID, it was in front of virtually nobody. Yet that one counted as an actual road game, whereas this one, which was in front of, the entire Kansas State fan base, will count as a neutral site location.
Right.
I'd also like to announce our first official enemy of the program. We've got a lot of friends of the program. Our first official enemy of the program is Kevin Sweeney, who is a college basketball analyst and writer for Sports Illustrated, I believe, in the field of 68. And he has gone out and taken the position that Drake does not deserve a spot in the top 25. So
He's getting shit on a little bit on Twitter, and rightfully
as he should
so.
be.
I think if you want to make an argument for Drake not being ranked, that's fine. But he specifically used the term, quote, pity vote to refer to giving Drake votes in the top 25, which is just a laughable take at that point. Like, if you want to argue like, okay, should 9-2 LSU be ranked over 10-0 Drake? Sure. But to call it a pity vote is just silly. And it's kind of funny to see so many people coming after him, not just Drake fans, but mid-major basketball fans in general.
I never thought I'd see the day that Jeff Goodman is advocating for Drake to be ranked in the top 25. And this guy, this guy is not like
Yeah,
Jeff
Kevin.
Goodman is not a mid-major basketball fan.
No, he's not. So Kevin Sweeney has dug his heels. So I guess he'll keep trolling mid-major basketball fans the rest of the year, since I guess he's trying to make that his thing, I suppose.
I mean, it makes sense. If you want to make a name for yourself, you go after the best.
Oh man, I feel like these 10 games have felt like a lot longer stretch of basketball. Maybe it's just wearing on us as fans as you're getting invested in and going through these, but we're at 10 and 0, Tucker. I don't know if you want to dive into anything else from the Kansas State game, or if you want to break down our previous win against St. Ambrose. I think we could do an entire 2 hours breaking down the 90 to 35 win, and another hour breaking down the feared showdown with Green Bay on Saturday.
I don't know how deeply we need to dive into the beatdown of the bees, but as you said, we are 10 and 0, which, following Utah State's loss last night, puts us among the final four teams nationally to be unbeaten. It's Drake, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Florida.
There you
So
go.
fighting Porter Mosers down there in Oklahoma, and then Tennessee and Florida. So good company.
Yeah, we're doing what we have to do and building a great resume. I know we keep talking about it's the net rankings just make me so angry, because it's such a flawed metric created to protect Power Five teams. And I make this point because I was looking over Joe Lunardi's bracketology, and like the Atlantic 10, for example, they're off to a great start. Several teams, really good wins, 10-1, 9-0, and you look over and like, yeah, they're not a multi-bid league. Really, the only multi-bid leagues outside of the Power Five are the Mountain West and the WCC. So it's virtually impossible at this point, to be getting at large consideration, unless you're in a Power Five conference. And for Drake, I'm going to keep saying this so that they just keep building the case and keep building the case, and eventually the Valley gets to potentially two bids. But unless Drake like goes like 19-1 in conference and loses in the championship game, then they would have to win the MVC tournament.
Yeah. And obviously, bracketology at this point in the season is essentially pointless. It's like looking into a crystal ball and trying to see the future. But, Joe Lunardi did have Vanderbilt listed in his last four out, to which I would say that seems pretty harsh considering the fact that they're in what is right now, I think, listed as the number one net conference, the SEC.
It's having historically one of the best seasons in the history of college basketball.
And Vandy is 9-1 with their only loss coming to your undefeated Drake Bulldogs.
Yeah,
And they've
good
picked up
point.
some decent wins. So seems like Joe is coming down unnecessarily hard on Liam Robbins' alma mater.
It's the second time I've heard a Liam Robbins reference today, because Giannis, who won the NBA Cup with the Milwaukee Bucks last night, said he wanted to win so that Liam can buy a house in Iowa. So there's your
Yeah.
second Liam Robbins reference of the day.
Yeah, if he wanted to live in Iowa, he shouldn't have transferred from Drake.
It's a good point. It's a good point. But hey, we're gonna keep an eye on Vanderbilt, Florida Atlantic, Kansas State. These programs have to do well this season to elevate our wins. I think right now we're 6-0 in quad two and quad three. I don't think any of those wins qualify right now as quad one, which is again kind of silly considering Vandy is 9-1.
The thing to remember, though, about all these flashy Power Five schools that we're beating is that once they enter conference play, all of their net rankings are going to rise just by virtue of winning or losing against quote unquote the right schools. Like this,
right.
The system is set so that these power schools can get a high enough net score to get into the NCAA tournament. So their net ranking is going to rise once they get into conference play. So I wouldn't worry too much about any of them having low net rankings now.
Keep an eye on it. We'll keep an eye on it, and we'll keep watching Drake rise through the ranks as well.
Yeah. So with that, should we move on from our celebration of our latest victory over a Power 5 school and on to the Bulldogs' next opponent?
Yeah, let's do it. You know, hit me with the Green Bay breakdown.
Yeah, man. Well, the Phoenix have struggled so far this year. They are 2-11 under first-year head coach Doug Gottlieb, who has maintained stewardship of his radio program while at the same time trying to guide his new basketball team to glory. They've had some tough losses. Most recently, they fell to Michigan Tech, which I'm not sure. Is that a D2 school?
Does not sound like a D1 school.
No, I'm 90% sure it's not. But as we well know, that's not necessarily a knock. I was genuinely asking. I wasn't trying to throw shade. But their two wins on the season have come against Western Illinois, 87-73, and SIU Edwardsville, 82-57. In terms of common opponents, they did play at Evansville. Obviously, we'll see later in Valley play, and they lost 98-81. They're led by Anthony Roy, who's one of the country's leading scorers at 25.7 points a game. He is an offensive stud. He shoots 50% from the field, and I would assume we'll have our hands full with him.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Roy is a terrific scorer and has garnered attention not only for being a terrific scorer, but because Gottlieb inexplicably decided to sit him down for a game and was very vague and cryptic and said that he wasn't following team rules. So clearly it's been a very strange year. And I would honestly want to be in the room with Gottlieb, like yelling at his team, saying like, you need to focus and buy in completely into the program, and this is like what we're doing, and not have everyone just start laughing, you know, because again, he's made it such a priority to maintain his radio show. So if somehow Doc Gottlieb listens to this, you know, he's welcome to come on the Drake basketball podcast. That seems to be way more of a priority than actually coaching his basketball team these days. But Green Bay, like you said, 2-11, have not looked good. Really, all I can say is when you have a terrific scorer like Anthony Roy and someone who can catch fire and put up a lot of points, you don't want to let them hang around. You don't want to let them get any confidence. And with Drake being undefeated and coming out off a huge win, you know Green Bay is going to be all amped up. So several things on the line for Drake on Saturday: our home court winning streak, our perfect start to the season, potentially getting ranked in the AP top 25. So lots at stake, need to take care of business and just not let Green Bay hang around and just put this one away.
Yeah, and from a fellow mid-major standpoint, not everybody really pays too much attention to this, but Drake is now the number one ranked team in the latest College Insider mid-major poll. So the number one team in America among mid-majors, according to College Insider. So Green Bay may come in fired up about that.
I'll throw out one more common opponent, transitive property, just for context. You mentioned a 14-point win against Western Illinois for Green Bay. Western Illinois beat St. Ambrose by 37. So if we do some quick math, I don't know where that gets us to, but there is that common opponent as well, since we just played the Bees. And that's the second time I've gotten St. Ambrose mentioned in this podcast. So, you know, I'm just making sure we're being fair to the St. Ambrose Bees.
The Fighting Bees, Eduardo. They aren't just bees. Show some respect. Put respect on their name.
Well, you know, if The real fans call him the Beast. I'm just making that up. But anything else you got on Green Bay? I don't know if we'll be potting before the Belmont game, which will be Drake's first home game in the Valley slate right after Christmas on the 29th too. That'll be a big one.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how it goes. I'm going to be at the Green Bay game, so if you're there and you see me, swing by, say what's up. Eduardo, will you be in attendance?
Will not. I will not. I won't be in attendance, but I am looking forward to seeing Murray State in a few weeks. I think that'll be a good one too, from the Nap. But yeah, I mean, I can't believe we have Green Bay to close out the non-con, and hopefully we make it a perfect 11-0. And we're gonna get right into it, hosting Belmont, and then you'll have visiting UIC, and then Murray State at home again.
Yes, sir.
Anything else you got on your end?
I just want to close it. Friend of the program and Drake University legend Dolph Pulliam said it best in this text that he sent me after the game last night. Hot damn, what a team. Go
Oh,
Dawgs.
go dogs. Also, humble brag. Also, go dogs.